Hello and welcome to IMP's WWE Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. Last week, Sam Brown had an interview out with Dickie from Chopped Tees, which leads me very smoothly into the plug that Social Suplex has merchandise. Amazing work by Dickie through the Chopped Tees, and a really interesting conversation with him and Sam Brown. But please do go and support us through Chopped Tees. Support everybody as well. Anyone who's ordered anything from any of us. It's crazy, and it means so much, and it really does help support us. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of blood and 2-hour television shows. We started off in Atlanta, Georgia, the former home of WCW, which will come up during the show. And then we had Monday Night Raw with its first 2-hour spell, so how did it do? Last week I was talking about how surely it's going to be so much better now it's 2 hours. Surely I don't have any complaints. But yeah, so let's just jump straight into it. We know what my pay-per-view shows are like now. Extra time needed and dedicated for the pay-per-view special, so let's not waste time. Not that I waste time anyway with these. And if I do, it gets cut, so you don't hear it. So let's jump on over to Atlanta, Georgia for Bad Blood.
Symbolically pouring them all over the head of Punk. But Oh my God! McIntyre!
Whew, that cell match was good fun, wasn't it? My thoughts as well, as I was watching it, I was just like, there's been nothing like this in WWE in quite some time. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if this is an era-defining match for a lot of younger fans or newer fans. An era-shifting match with a level of violence. Because it's generally been about 16, 17 years since WWE aired a match so violent and bloody. We've had spots that were bloody, or we've had, like, Roman Reigns vs. Brock Lesnar, which had the blood packets at the WrestleMania match that got booed on the building. So we've had little things, but we've not had a full-on blood feud match with actual blood in it. Been such a long time. To finally see it, it's like, oh, it feels like finally we've entered this kind of awesome new era. And I will keep saying for WWE, because not for wrestling, because that's almost like the entire point of AEW was to present a style of wrestling that WWE won't do, to go after an audience that WWE aren't going for in that older audience. And that's what I want. I want my wrestling to be a variety. I don't want it all to feel the same. I don't want each company to be doing what the other one's doing because it's successful. Like, no, I want them to both be going after different demographics. And this, for me, yes, it was more bloody. Yes, it was more violent. Yes, there were some insane bumps. I'll bring up some of the talking points from the Hangman's Worth match when I'm talking about this match with CM Punk Drew McIntyre. Because, like, my God, some of those bumps. But it never crossed that line from just a level of violence that I would feel uncomfortable as a parent. Yes, it got violent. Yes, it was actual blood. But it was never anything where you're like, okay, this is not intended for a child audience. It was never that level. A difficult line to take, but they managed to do it. They kept it within the kind of WWE style. Maybe just being way more showmanistic, which is just that WWE way. Maybe that helps. It just turns it down, feels less guttural or whatever. Actually, before I get into CM Punk vs Drew McIntyre properly, I just want to say that before we get into the match, the way that Bad Blood kicked off, Naomi, Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill opened the show as hosts. My immediate read was that, because it had kind of blew up that WWE had managed to book a pay-per-view in Atlanta, Georgia, without a single black person on the card. There still wasn't, but this was somewhat, for me, like, immediately I saw it as like a see-through quick fix to address the optics. It doesn't fix anything. Part of the critique was black audiences having no main eventers, no black singles win on pay-per-view for over a year. You got Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair winning, but there hasn't been a men's victory in a long time, especially a men's singles wrestler. I guess what doesn't help optically as well is the opposition in AEW. That did comment of coming across of above market values, like, ugh. But yeah, none of this is going to fix the problem. The argument keeps being brought up about NXT. Well, look at the main eventers there. It's like NXT, in terms of the level of hierarchy within WWE, is undercard of the main roster. It's the undercard equivalent. Of course, they get their own show to really develop and hone their stuff and get over. But they have got a lot of really promising black talent in NXT. Obviously, you watch it and you see Trick Williams. You're like, oh yeah, he screams that there's something special there. But NXT has had a plentiful of black talent in the past that just haven't made it on the main roster. Obviously, what doesn't help was the crazy old man that was in top, where he saw so many amazing talents make it to the main roster, only to just be Blair. What's they got there? But it hasn't translated onto the main roster. And I feel like they've got a good crop coming through NXT where they really could do something. And I'll put Carmelo Hayes in there where, for me, Carmelo and Trick complement each other really well to a point where they can get each other over through something, just from what I've seen in NXT. They don't have to be a tag team to get together again, but they seem to be two guys that are really good at just making themselves better every time. Trick's one drawing a lot of attention because he's the NXT champion. But that's not the worry. The worry isn't that NXT and developmental's got promising stars. The worry is that audience won't have anybody in the main event to cheer for. There is nobody like them in the WWE main event. The representation isn't there. It doesn't exist. The critique is there. It's totally understandable. They got to build, when I say got to build someone up, obviously from the very boring business side. So, if you want to make money from a demographic, give them someone to support. it's not that difficult, really. Don't Jinder Mahal it. Don't just rush somebody up. No, give them reason to get invested in somebody. They're doing a decent job with Carmelo Hayes, but it feels like the decent job where he's going to be a US champion mid-card kind of guy. They're not building him up to feel like a main event level talent. Is the kind of build that he's getting at the moment. Because that's the one thing about wrestling which blows my mind when I go to Twitter and I see certain people talking a certain way about things. Especially the comment that in WWE, Swerve being mid-carder, and immediately people going, "You're so close to getting it. You're so close to understanding the problem. You've just swung the complete wrong way, the complete other direction." But yeah, in the world of wrestling, in terms of the perception of characters and things, the backstage staff control everything. It makes no sense to me. It's their character's not good enough. They can write a character that's good enough. You control everything. You book what places you go to and all of that stuff. So if you want to give the wrestler a big hometown cheer, just book an arena in their hometown. It's not crazy. It's not that complicated. You can build, when you build the promotion around somebody, you do control everything, from the characters to the storylines to the production. There's just so much you can do. It's absolutely crazy to get out of that, but the character's not main event. They're right, a main event character. Again, if it doesn't pay off, if it doesn't quite work, then, but you tried. That's one thing here. With Triple H's comment was just awful. My God, does anyone have a worse PR mindset? Cody Rhodes is amazing at PR. That's me saying that to somebody who's definitely Republican. But it's just he really knows what he's talking about when he's talking about how to do PR. He knows his stuff. But Triple H's comment immediately, I don't feel like I'm the right voice to talk about this, but the fact that it's so blatantly not right to me, there's a reason the I don't see colour has been memed online. There's a reason it got immediately taken the piss out of. You saying you don't see colour translates to a person of colour. That means that you're saying you don't see my struggle. Just immediately, come on. My assumption, because immediately as soon as you said that, I was pretty sure that Vince said that in the documentary. So my immediate thought was Triple H had watched the documentary, seen the line and got over there, or maybe the line was just in his head, or that is generally he thought it was a good PR line that WWE have just been saying, or Vince had said it for so long that he thought it was a decent PR line when it just isn't. Maybe it was in the 80s. When it seems a big deal to push anybody of colour. Nowadays, saying that means that you're not seeing how it translates to it. But also that brings me again to Cody Rhodes. He's got that clip of him saying directly that. Pretty certain AOC retweeted after he said that. Did I make that up? That sounds like a made up world. Did I dream that? But anyway, I could stay stuck on that topic, but they control everything there. And there's some really promising talents in NXT. I've brought up Trick Williams. For me, the minute I saw Obi Femi, I was like, that's him. Obi Femi is the man. If you build stuff around him, he can be an absolute star. He absolutely screams it. They've got multiple talents. Obviously, Obi Femi is just a bit more green. I don't know how much time he needs. I don't want to see somebody get fast-tracked just so that they can optically say, "Oh, no, look, we do push black talent." No. Spend time building somebody. When we compare the two, the worst thing that they could do is temporarily push somebody to address the optics, rather than actually building somebody up for the fans to get invested in long-term. Because that's what AEW done with Swerve. They've cultivated an audience to long-term be invested in that character. Don't fast-track a guy onto the main roster and just push him so you can optically say, "Look, we do it." No, spend time building around him. Build the strong characters. Build everything I was talking about with figuring out the production and everything. You spend your time doing it. Yeah, the fans are going to get invested. Anyway, let's get back to the show. I said no tangents then, Jesus Christ. The three women introduced Hell in a Cell before pitting off to party in the VIP seats for the rest of the show. Throughout the night, parading the ringside legends like Goldberg, Lillian Garcia, X-Pac, Arn and Tully, showing Jacqueline and Booker T. The thing that reminded me of is that line of the talent isn't there. That's Triple H almost saying to them that I don't think you're talented enough. Jesus Christ. That's why it's bad PR, just all around. But also, it didn't fly for Saturday Night Live a decade ago. It certainly doesn't fly for WWE now. And surprise, surprise, when Saturday Night Live put in the effort to find black talented comedians, surprise, surprise, they found loads of them. It turns out the talent was there, it's just you weren't putting in the effort. Almost same read here. If you put in the effort to find said talent and develop that talent, surprise, surprise, the talent will be there. Especially in a WWE world where you control all of the writing, the production and the characters and everything. You can cultivate whatever you want. So, anyway, let's jump into the Hell in a Cell match, CM Punk vs Drew McIntyre. The fans clamouring for Punk as the cell was lowered. So a nice move to have Drew come out first instead just to get boo for Drew McIntyre. Walk and brawling around ringside to get us into things and bring the weapons out. A wrench to the face, but this is violence that kids can enjoy, so no wrench blood. Sticking with that, trying to get creative, they use the table legs to tease violence. To be honest, how nice it was to see them be able to do that without any chance about wanting to see them go through said table. They're invested in the story. There's no need for any against the show chance. Like, hooray. Claymore at ringside, then launching Punk face first into the steel. And actual blood. That ain't no blood packet. Punk genuinely wore the crimson mask, which worked perfectly to bring back the wrench. Now we get wrench blood! Hooray! Actual wrench blood. Really caught me off guard. I just assumed, like, we get the wrench to the head and blah blah blah. It would never come back and it would just be a spot where they're trying to be inventive. Like, no. We've moved on. This is a different era now. Drew using the Chicago man's downtime to set up a ringside table. The crowd actually getting behind seeing the Scots do his thing. Like, this is awesome after a suplex countered a top rope Punk and boos after the Claymore was rolled away from. They just want to see the things. Big toolbox to the head and McIntyre was bleeding too. Like, Jesus Christ, his entire forehead like instantly red in like it was tomato juice. Like, Jesus Christ, the amount of stitches he needed from that as well. Which then obviously stirred the commentary of, so no, there's no commentary about the safety of cutting a man open so badly with a stiff hit from a toolbox. But, you know, a gimmicked chair where it looks bad but actually isn't, like, that's infinitely worse. Both companies do stuff which looks good. Yeah, technically, toolbox, way more dangerous. The visual of them both donning the crimson was the final selling point this feud desperately needed. And it's so refreshing to see WWE let them do it. Going for a certain reference as a bloody Drew yelled, locked in the sharpshooter. Also, with all the big spots, that wrench got the biggest reactions. He's like, why would you do all these big crazy spots where you can just grind a wrench into somebody's head and get the biggest reaction from it? The School of Orange Cassidy. He's got it down. Take as few bumps as possible. Yeah, huge reactions for doing minimal. That said, one of the biggest was certainly the crazy suplex from Drew falling with Punk through that ringside table. Like, Jesus Christ. Drew used the steps so well as a prop to sell his wear and tear, just a complete inability to even lift the thing into the ring, selling his exhaustion as he set up to future shock and out of it Punk onto the steel steps, which is what made the sudden GTS nearfall so believable, and then the white noise onto the steps so much bigger, like, these lads know what they're doing. Surprise, surprise. Kaluba Clutch about to get wrenched, but Punk got that wrench to stop Drew instead, which drew even more blood from Drew as he was in the corner, dripping with it as he swatted away the ref's towel, knowing this is the big emotional beat of the match with his little bag full of bracelet beads. Then the Jesus Christ bump, a brutal bump, missing a claymore and landing half on his back on the steel steps. That's the one that got the biggest reaction out of everybody. That's almost a bump that's just instantly the thing that's remembered almost most from the match. It's that absolutely brutal bump. There's a footage of the fans where he caught the commentary, and as soon as Drew takes that bump, Corey Graves is like, oh my God. He just stands up and turns away. He's like, oh no. Oh my God. But just a reminder that the swerve needle spot was like the safest spot of the match. Like, it was the thing that drew some of the biggest ire. It's like, No, that was one of the safest spots. I don't know why you're not comparing it to the cinder block spot, but sure, yeah, compare it to the needle spot for whatever, for some reason. But Twitter's strange now. Punk amping up with a chain around his knee, shoving those beads down his enemy's throat and nailing the GTS for the win. Perfect ending to a completely end of the feud. It's totally believable that this is the end of a genuine blood feud, and they sold it as a blood feud, which we haven't seen in WWE in quite some time. Yeah, this match, for me, absolutely knocked it out of the park. This was, for me, match of the year contender. Also, the selling afterwards was top-notch, like Punk stumbling on the ramp, medics giving him oxygen as Drew struggled to get to his feet in the ring. When I'm watching this, it's like they knew what they were doing here and really stayed with it to sell the aftermath. They didn't go, okay, match is over, you got a minute, and then we're cutting to commercials. Like, no, they stayed with it to sell what we had just seen and stayed in the atmosphere for a bit, then cut to commercial bullshit. We just stayed in the moment for a little while. They did everything they could to make it feel special as well, turning off it afterwards, and I don't want to see one for a long time. Like, it was a year and a half since they did it previously. A similar time frame, if not longer. Like, I'm perfectly fine for these to not be regular at all. They have to be earned, rather than, oh, it's been a while since we've seen a Hell in a Cell, what are they going to do this year? No, earn this match. Anyway, go on to the rest of the card. Oh, wait, there's the main event. No, actually, let's end on a high. Let's get through the bullshit. The show after this match takes a massive nosedive and just becomes on. Like, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. And maybe, like, staying on that, like, 2.5-star kind of is perfectly fine. Like, it's not a trope. To me, 2.5-star is, for me, that's average. Like, that's absolutely fine. But, like, the middle of this show is just very averagely okay. So, to start with the bullshit, Nia Jax versus Bayley. Bad Blood Bayley out for championship. I guess didn't finish that note. We're bang in the middle of building Nia as the force of a champion, really still in the early days. Like, we're a good way off of the last dropping the thing, so build that last up, Bayley. Give us a realistic kind of believable way for her to win. A little chuckle at Nia walking away from a dive, amping up Bayley, going full Zack Sabre Jr. and utilizing just move, dickhead. It's genius. Turns out Nia just got the spot muddled. I did not read it right at all, with Bayley finding a way to repeat the setup and do the spot later. It's a weird match where some of it, fine, it looked great, whatever, but there was quite a few spots that I just completely kind of just break the match a little bit and have to build up the flow again. For me, there's two kinds of botches. There's a botch where it's instantly recovered and it's almost like it never mattered. And then there's the kind where it actively, both wrestlers are like, okay, let's take a beat, then go again. You're taking that beat with them whenever that happens. But, you know, for the safety of everybody, I'd rather you did take that beat and then proceeded whatever to be next. I'd rather you did that than try and make up for it. You know what? I'll commend Nia for trying to genuinely mix up her offense and grow, deliver something different, but obviously not for the execution. Like, the crowd popping hard for the head scissors reversal and Bayley to belly to Bayley herself. The same for the sunset flip into the corner. Just like a beat off, but the crowd was popping regardless. And the pop-up Samoan drop. Like, they're not going to get those stars, but the crowd is still having a jolly old time anyway. They're popping huge for seeing Nia do all this stuff. But us on the camera feed, we're seeing it and be like, ooh, it's a bit rough. It's a bit rough. In the end, a steps-banged Jax was too big for Bayley to lift into the ring. And the poor lass got power-bammed onto them before getting swung into the barricade to start our closing flow. Poor ref, Jess. I forgot about this. A Bayley kick properly flattened the champion onto the referee. So the referee's in between them. So you're like, sort of like, oh, am I hurt? Just kind of a little bit dazed. And then Bayley kicks over her to Nia's head. And Nia just completely flattens the ref. Cue the visual win for Bayley with the referee down. And it's tiffy time. Stratton waking the ref, who just picked up her Money in the Bank briefcase. I wound back to check what happened. So Tiffany Stratton comes in, sees the folk down. It's like, oh, I can win this match for Nia. She puts her Money in the Bank briefcase down, wakes up the referee. The referee picks up the briefcase with, like, absolutely nothing from Tiffany Stratton to even insinuate that she wanted to cash in. It's like, no. You know what? I'm putting zero blame on Stratton here. She genuinely did not do any gesture to hand that briefcase to her. It was just on the floor. That is all on the official. Cue the feud of Stratton versus Jessica Carr. She has a grievance. Writes a grievance. It was like she wanted the baddies to fall out. Carr was in it all on it all along. Go after her, Stratton. Villains arguing gave Bayley her roll-up near fall, but the elbow drop she beat Naomi with last week wasn't coming. Stratton throwing her briefcase to Bayley in distraction, who just immediately threw it back at her, but it was enough for Jax to Samoan drop her off the corner and sit on her for the win. I know it's called the Annihilator, but her finisher is she sits on you. I said it with Yokozuna. It's the same here. The crowd never lost their investment in it. They stayed with this match kind of, again, at that 2-3 star kind of level. They were in on it, but not going crazy, and they were reacting to everything really positively, having a great old time. But it was still just a bit rough. But it kind of set the tone for the next two matches, where it's this pay-per-view which has such a white-hot start, and then it's just fine. I wouldn't be missing anything if I hadn't watched it, level of, it's okay. It's just a strange feeling when it's such a white-hot product, and then I watch it, and it's like, it's fine. It's okay. Finn Balor versus Damian Priest. For me, this was the match where that really set in. Kick, punchy, stompy stomps, Priest pissed off, Balor the villain looking to prove himself. It was all right, like your modern day WWE 3-star wrestle, but with characters the crowd are so invested in. Like, I don't know whether to call this a hot feud or whether they've just done a good job making Priest and Ripley hot, because Finn Balor isn't a believable person to defeat Priest at all at this moment. The Judgment Day just don't have that feeling to them at all. But what they are using them to really get over Priest and Ripley. Those two feel so incredibly over. because Damian Priest wasn't anywhere near as over as MVP before his world title reign, and he wasn't really as over during it. But what they've done since, both of them feel like they really are both getting incredibly over. A great forearm from our Damien, like Balor off the top rope and whoop-bang. Really was good stuff. Spinning to the ringside for a tad as the announce table got teased. Back into the ring, kicked us into the interference portion. Carlito to distract, McDonough to grab, and Balor to coup de grace for the near fall. The crowd yeeting, but Priest had this, he didn't need Jay. Clobbering and launching the lads away. The final flow, lovely fun. A series of coup de grace to the standing man's back. But the third was caught and South of Heaven chokeslam for the win. A match that did its job. But a match that felt very much like we're in the early just having fun part of a WWE feud. I wouldn't say it felt particularly heated. I wouldn't say it felt particularly over. It's like, okay, this is where we're going to be for the next little while. And it's just perfectly fine. It's all right. Actually, speaking of that reaction, I told you it continued. We've got two more segments of, like, oh, okay. Paul Triple H Levesque was what he was announced as he made his way out. He came on out and he just hates going out there. Like, please don't make me sing. Plugging Crown Jewel to boos. Even in this new era where they love everything about WWE. The Saudi shows still get booed every time. Men's and women's champion versus champion matches with a big fancy crown jewel with expensive diamonds and whatnot. Championship on the line. It's nicer than any other title in the company. That's what Saudi money buying diamonds gets you. Which brings out Gunther. He won King of the Ring the last time they were in the kingdom, ribbing on his Monday night opponent Sami Zayn, before ribbing amazingly on the legends we've seen ringside. Immediately Goldberg chants. They know where this segment's going. The man he called his favourite to Bret Hart, a good time as any to clarify to Bill that he was never actually a hero of his, and calling him a one-trick pony, going full Christian Cage, telling his son, I hope he's a better father than he is a professional wrestler. Gotta give Atlanta their Goldberg pop, but that gave Sammy the opening to jump the champion to a nice little hot moment, and maybe give us a Gunther Goldberg match at some point. I wouldn't be against it for the Rumble, just to give Gunther an opponent to have that big match and maybe survive. It feels like there's actually quite a few good open spaces for Gunther and Goldberg to just do a thing, just to like carry over so you can get a lot of these really white hot characters into a bigger match, be that the Survivor Series Bloodline stuff or be that the Royal Rumble, so you can get them into the Rumble, make that bigger. But yeah, you can do a big showcase match for Gunther. Also, that's me massively assuming that that's what Triple H would do, because it feels like we have left that era of like the legends getting big title matches over the current roster. That was a big commending thing for AEW, with the way they've used their legends. That they featured them, they've been big stars, they've been made to feel important and iconic, but they're not in title matches over the current lot. They are not the champions, or they don't beat the current top lads at all or anything. And it feels like the current state of WWE has kind of entered that realm as well. And this Bad Blood show, it felt like the most respectful to the legends of the past then WWE has shows have been in ever. Just trying to think, because it almost feels disrespectful to the past to have them be put over the current crop, because their thing was, we laid down the road for you, but also we're refusing to step out the way, which then made them look like dickheads that they maybe probably weren't. So it's like, oh, okay. Also, it was hilarious to see online people seeing that segment and then going, oh, what does that mean? We're gonna get Gunther Goldberg in Saudi. Oh, Goldberg going for that Saudi paycheck. It's like, do you people watch the show? Do you actually listen? I know Twitter has become this place where you have to farm engagement so you can get paid and get money. Sean was sat with being hilarious because today was the people with Twitter Blue stuff would start to be paid for other people's engagements rather than the ads being paid. And it was like, from minute one, we're like, yeah, Musk is eventually going to find a way to stop paying you guys or start paying you less. So, you know, maybe find something that you're good at and hone that skill instead of this, because it's not going to last. And surprise, surprise, today was that day. So, you know, maybe people who genuinely aren't watching the show and are literally just posting to get that engagement stuff. It's like, yeah, they're like, now the people commenting on your videos are going to be, you know, trying to engagement drive. It's like, ah. The Women's World Championship. Here we go for the final bullshit. Dominic Mysterio in a shark cage. Liv Morgan versus Rhea Ripley. Right. This was just full-on bullshit. I don't mean that in a ribbing on it negative way. I mean full of nonsense. Absolutely chocker full of it. Dom and Liv out in the Mattel toy lowrider. The ref has his earpiece camera. Oh boy, here we go. Fair to say we had started out with goofiness before Rey's music had even hit. And Cole plugged the Dom Mysterio toilet paper that they are legitimately selling on WWE Shop. They legitimately plugged Dominic Mysterio toilet paper and said that you can buy it now on WWE Shop. The shark cage raised and Dom in the sky. The goofy ship dealt with. meaning we were to be treated to a good old Morgan Ripley wrestle, right? Like, we've actually got, it's been a heated feud, like, we're going to get a heated feud match, right? Well, the first few minutes were certainly grand. Like, Rhea launched Liv about the chance of Mammy before Liv snuck back in and got to show her wily baddie ability, slowing it down, right down. And, well, actually, they all started character a bit as Rhea Ripley climbed to the top rope, Graves hitting her on her, like, going, oh, she's going to be doing another Dominic thing, before she yeets and shows us all that, no, Mammy's indeed moved on. Riptide to Liv under the shark cage right by Dom, and a great little stunt with Dom falling out the cage, only for his chained ankle to have him dangling upside down. That is a visual which is going to be remembered. There's been the commentary that this story has somewhat undermined the women's title and made it secondary. And we got to see that in action. This match didn't contradict that. This match fed into that. It proved that they were right. As Ripley whipped poor Dom with a kendo stick when she could have gone for the match, and I guess their story is that she's so incensed, but so caught up in this that she couldn't refuse it, and that cost her the match. Out ran Raquel Rodriguez, and apparently this ending was completely mucked up, returning after months and turning villain to a line as Liv's heavy. Match thrown out, Liv retained in a DQ. Fair to say the goofiness did not end once the bell rang. Like, at all. Full on goofiness. Apparently everyone was very confused to see that the referee just watched it all, and there was just like, we're going to have to do DQ now. So it just ended a bit flat in DQ. It still sets up the main point of the Raquel Rodriguez alliance into the Judgment Day. Like, it still does that. So, and that still feels like it's going to be a decent pairing. Just the match itself just kind of like died a damp squid. So, yeah. Anyway, so use that opportunity to jump onto the main event. Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes versus the Bloodlines, Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu.
There's some dude in a hoodie and a bandana at ringside. And he just took out Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa. Oh my goodness! Jimmy Uso is back!
I wanted to do this last on this, just so I'm talking about something in a very positive way. These style of matches aren't for me. I can just see why they're as big as they are, and the kind of feeling that we were getting where there's a lot of people talking about the mega powers again. It's because it feels like we're bouncing off of that and using it in the best way possible. A big Atlanta parade for hometown Cody. Marching band around the ring playing his theme. Not to be outdone by Roman getting a full orchestra that are just miming out on the ramp. Like, all right, keep your dick measuring to yourselves, lads. Commentary hitting hard that the baddies are out alone tonight after the tag team ladder match on Smackers the night before. A 30-minute tag, doing well on building Fatu as a future main lad, giving us our first match for Roman Reigns since WrestleMania, and setting the table for the next one nicely. The only loser here is Solo. Like, not even them giving him a run of offense on Roman Reigns saved that. Lots of Dusty Rhodes echoes from both Cody and the commentary lads. Will Cody have his partner turn on him just like his dad had on him 41 years ago? A long spell of Cody eating shit. When WWE is critiqued as spectacle over quality, this main event is exactly what is meant. The characters are over as hell. The occasion given all the gravitas. The match is, though, it's fine. It's okay. I did enjoy the final five, as well as like the odd production bit because I'm a nerd like that. Like the camera following over the shoulder of Roman as he amped himself up to climb the steps and get the hot tag of his partner. Like a single shot with no cuts as we stayed in the moment with him. That was nice. Fatu the difference maker once again, but Rhodes had the fight to fend off. Just didn't count on him receiving the no-selling monster booking. Groggy on the announce table, Cody up on the corner, and a big old splash flying with a crash through the announce table. The crowd loving life as the focus switched back to Roman and Solo in the ring, the two trading blows and so behind Reigns whenever he nailed any signature move or taunt. But it was also your standard Bloodline fare as the Tongans distracted for a great spear nearfall, after which the camera stayed close in on Solo and Roman, but in the background, every fucker got their phones out and they all looked to the right. There's some dude in a hoodie and mask at ringside called Cole. Accurately. I've been rewatching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, so it's nice to hear some Captain Holt commentary. He's like, there's a man in a hoodie and a mask at ringside. Like, yes, accurate commentary. It's Jimmy Uso, and the crowd goes crazy on their feet for the original Bloodline uniting. A spear for the win, and a big hug with his cousin after. But there's still 6 minutes left on the show. I didn't watch this live. I could see how much long was left. Like, what's going to happen? And there sits Cody in the opposite corner as we get another lovely shot, a single shot walking around the shoulders of both men, staying in that ring in that moment with them. Bloodline got pissed and jumped Cody afterwards. Jimmy the man to convince Roman to help Cody, saying that he didn't have to stay as a one-time deal, you can help him out here. Roman vs. Cody 3 is the end game, but first, if you smell such a smart play with the crowd, already good to go home happy, then you hit them with the final boss. But who is he going to hit? Who is he pissed off? Is it both of them? Are we building to a triple threat? Are we building to a singles match and then delaying one of it? Like, you're going to have to wait and find out. But a really strong ending to the show. As I'm recording this, we've not had the SmackDown since, so we don't know what the immediate aftermath is going to be. But it's a really, really strong way to end the show. They were so into Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, and again, using the what they'd done in the past with the Macho Man Hulk Hogan stuff with the mega powers. Take what stuff from that storyline and insert it into here just to really play off of it. Also, Dusty's own history in this building as well, with his team acting partner turning on him. There was so much they were using to feed into this storyline, but they fed it into this so well. It was, genuinely was a kind of perfect tag team WWE main event for their audience. I'll be honest, like, I'll enjoy Young Bucks every single time. I'll enjoy their matches more than this, but for the WWE audience, this is what they want, and they absolutely got to eat. And then there's the Rock return. When it feels like you've had so many beats to be sent home happy, Roman coming back and saving Cody, that kind of, it's felt like the right beat to end the show on. Then The Rock comes out. So yeah, really, really good stuff. Bad Blood overall, I've seen quite a few mixed reviews ever since it's aired, and I feel like that's kind of the correct way. It's a show with two matches that WWE fans are going to rate very highly come the end of the year. But in between, it wasn't great. Very, very skippable. Like, if somebody were to ask me, do I actually need to watch these? I would just say, you're not really missing anything by not watching the rest of the show. Just watch the bookends. Watch the Hell in a Cell. Watch the main event. And skip the rest. It really doesn't matter. Mediocre / below for most of the show, but the opener and the closer, genuinely, like, that is some incredible stuff. Anyway, so let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw. It's already long enough for this recording. So when I get this trimmed down to a good time, I'll be very interested.
Break of the sleeper. Going to bring it up with DLI. Inches away from doing it. Oh, no! Guther in complete control.
Sometimes a big pairing wrestled at hyperspeed in a shorter time slot works magic. At the World Heavyweight Championship, Gunther versus Sami Zayn, no room for down periods to build the action back up, just going at it full pelt for the whole run. Like, I'm picturing Omega vs. Okada 3 in the G1 when I say that, but it still applies here. It still applies to a telly main event like this too. Not on the same level, but it still applies. Half the time they've received previously, so they expertly just crammed it all into the 12-13 minutes of airtime that they had. Sami again showing he's the one that has the champion's number. As dominant as Gunther is, they did a solid job of painting the challenger as more than an underdog. Gunther's running fire not enough. Always a fan of the champion having to go somewhere else and innovate when the usual doesn't work. Again, I'm thinking of Okada. Like, that man's like such a great template for this stuff. The kick out at one after a second lariat powerbomb, so well done. Both lads knowing that the crowd were in the palm of their hands for the sleeper finish. These two are so good. Then to close the show, Cody Rhodes was there as the other champion Gunther now has to face. Just enough time to stare into each other's eyes with the Crown Jewel logo in the background. That's what they're going for, right? So, yeah. Wrestling is inherently homosexual. Let's just stare into each other's eyes lovingly whilst we hype our Saudi Arabia show. But yeah, really strong main event. Really solid stuff. Set each other up nicely for what's to come afterwards. You're leaving a lot on the table from using what you did in the past and feed into this one, but then not give the fans like everything they want because you're still trying to cram it in, and then you can give them a longer like final blow at some point. I've talked about Gunther maybe having a Goldberg run at some point, but whenever Sammy's next free, you can do Sami Gunther 3. Maybe that can be your Rumble match. Or that can be your Elimination Chamber once to feed off of Sami, maybe getting big opportunities at the Chamber. There's a lot you can do, but this felt like a really good third installment, like really shrunk down so that you can, again, at some point, do a third way down the line. CM Punk and Seth Rollins, all banged up and selling the damage of the war. Punkerton limped on out and bid farewell for a tad, saying that he's going to spend time with his wife. It was a backstage at NXT. Punk, are you going to go home to your wife? What are you doing backstage at NXT? I'd like to say that I'd see you soon, but I just don't know. When Burn It Down blares out of the Titantron, it's your Death Rebel era, where they say the catchphrase or they say the name and then the music plays. Seth Rollins isn't even safe. A quick stare down on the ramp like two passing ships in two separate promo segments. Punk going away backstage, Rollins into the ring after his return last week. That's the big program tease, now onto your scheduled Bronson Reed programming. You want to get famous, big boy? Ooh, matron. Laying down the challenge for the big lad who, what did take him out? I told you wrestling was inherently homosexual. Only for Seth's music to get interrupted by Jey Uso. Out to the ring with pace. Like, Raw's an hour shorter. There's no time for faffing. It felt like this Monday Night Raw was trying to cram way too much into the 2 hours, which meant that a lot of stuff just lost a lot of substance. We started the show with the Intercontinental Championship, Jey Uso versus Xavier Woods. Not much time dedicated to this at all, like 5 or 6 minutes on the air. Woods springboard met with a perfectly timed superkick and a big old splash for the win. Got to get it over quick because the segment only has so much time and we've got to both have Xavier's no honour reaction as well as Breaker's charge in to yet to do. Using the framing the ring to the left stuff that I was complimenting during WrestleMania, where it feels like you're framing the ring to the left not to hide anything but to show the depth of the crowd. And when you do that with Jey Uso's yeet thing, like, it's believable enough. Of course, you can still hear the crowd reaction. Using it to their benefit as the focus is on the crowd when Breakers starts his running charge, Woods telling Kofi not to interfere, him doing so after time was wasted arguing, directly getting all of them beat up. Quick note, if you read this as, but Breaker was a face last week, then all I can say is, we're watching wrestling in such a boring binary way. I described it last week as a character note that can be used to lean on in the future when he's a main lad, but this week was always for the wrecking. WWE doing simple and loudly projected character beats was seemingly too much for some viewers. All you need to know is, like, oh, people are like, they've been watching a lot of television for a long time, like, they're going to be pretty, like, literate to this stuff. Oh, no, 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 no. No, 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 no. See a bad guy do a good high guy trait. He's like, oh, that means he's turning into a good guy. No, he's a bad guy showing a good guy trait. They're allowed to be more complicated than being full-on moral virtuous heroes or full-on evil despicable villains here. So no, they can share traits. Like, Sami Zayn was a full-on dickhead to get Gunter to give him his match. Other notes, Sexy Red was the one who fully kicked off the show, just very quickly cut off. Last week when I said 2 hour shows are better for the viewers, I mean, not when you pack 3 hours worth of segments into it, it's not. Like, a run of 6 minute matches with 3 minutes of ads certainly ain't it. A 10 woman tag match coming out with 30 minutes left on the show when we still had Gunter versus Sami Zayn to come. Like, what are we doing here? This is how much time the Divas era was booked to have. Yesterday it was coming out that there really was a lot of negativity in the way that that 10 woman tag match happened. Like, it felt so Divas era. Like, really limited amount of time, a ad break in the middle, just cutting your investment, and when you return talking about other stuff, like, it's just like, like, you got it on but it's not important, and it's almost telling you, like, this is the piss break before the main event. When we say the women were the piss break, this is what we meant, where the show tells you without outright telling you, if you want to go now, this is the time to go, because it's this little down period before the match. It's all about, like, show momentum and placement on the cards. It's telling you what you should be invested in. I mean, it's a Vince McMahon thing of, you don't like what you think you like, you like what I tell you like. He's just talking about basic television. It's not a crazy thing. Him obviously talking about it in a very egomaniac way, but it is just a standard television thing where show momentum, pacing of the show and whatever, it orchestrates your investment, and people behind the camera know what they're doing. One of the editors' like main things is sorting out the pacing, making sure the flow's right. Obviously, with live television, way more difficult. That said, they control everything. It's what I was talking about with trying to create characters to make sure that viewers feel like they're represented on the show. You write and control everything. If you think a character isn't strong enough to be somewhere high up the card, you can write a different character. You can write whatever you want. You can put the resources in to make sure that that groundwork is there when they arrive. But yeah, this placement on the card tells you that the women's division doesn't matter. That's what the show told you with their placement on the card. I don't have to go too much into it because immediately the reaction was do better. On a week where the critique of featuring the black wrestlers was also do better. I was like, yeah, now step backwards for the women. Like, do better than this. Sheamus and Pete Dunne had a lovely banger of a good old-fashioned Donnybrook match, aka yet another wacky name for a standard no DQ, but this one had big barrels at ringside for Sheamus to white noise the poor Birmingham lad off of. Both lads wielded weapons, shillelagh for Sheamus and a cricket bat for Dunne, because it's the one thing it's one of the few things Americans know about us, but at least they didn't have cricket balls like AEW did. Like, those bastards sting. Nice finish to the match too, with Shamu nailing a bro kick with his hands tied behind his back. That was just no DQ fun. The Crown Jewel Championship about as over as every other Saudi Arabia thing. The difficulty they have is that fans won't really care because we've seen a title introduced like this before, with the title just then immediately being forgotten about once the show is over. It's about the aftermath selling the importance of the win afterwards with this. Sell why the win mattered after it. Like, we've been conditioned for that to not happen though, so the investment doesn't happen, and I don't know if you're going to be able to before the show, but you can get us invested afterwards. Wyatt 6 glitched over The Miz talking to Karrion Kross. I think he glitched over Cody backstage as well. Confused R-Truth talks himself into a match with Angry Mike next week. And finally, NXT GM Ava was backstage talking to Adam Pearce. Ethan Page airing his beef after he lost his title match with Punk as a referee. As the integration between the main roster and NXT just comes a little bit stronger, it feels like what they were trying to set up all along in the past, they're finally kind of diverting into. I watched NXT this week for the first time in such a long time. When I started watching, if Obafemi hadn't been champion for that long, I watched him win the title and it felt like a really strong push. He had the whole title, I think I watched maybe a month of his reign. They're tuning in this week to watch him lose. Like, ah. But it dawned on me, he's like, oh no, he has held the title for a while, I've just not been watching. So it's not like one where he's like, oh, they gave him a short reign. It's like, no, I've just not been watching. So he did have it for a while. The presentation felt so much closer to what they've wanted it to be, where the integration with it and the main roster is a lot stronger. Like, you don't know who is going to show up. Like, that was kind of the case with early NXT, where you did get those main roster stars showing up, but it was still the main focus about building up that new talent. But it feels like it's a developing ground. The current state of NXT feels far, far better than what it kind of fell into, like the horny version with NXT 2.0, the way too overlit and colourful version. The NXT under the Triple H regime was like a mix between the two, like bringing in a bit of the black and the yellow, but it was still in that way too overlit, way too overproduced studio. They were using those same characters from 2.0, just kind of doing them a bit differently. One of the main negative points for NXT, like one of the reasons I stopped covering it, is it got to a point where whenever I would picture a backstage segment for the show, I'd be like, oh yeah, I don't want to watch that. I just got such a negative connotation because those backstage segments were just like, oh, so badly written and so, and also before badly performed and badly blocked. I'm just like, oh, do I have to watch this? Oh, why, how is this on national television? But yeah, this week's NXT pretty strong. I didn't watch last week's. I didn't want to watch an NXT like big special event. Maybe it's just because WWE 2K24 is on PlayStation Plus now, so I've been playing that. But I just got the urge to just watch like a standard NXT show because I wasn't covering it. I just skipped through it, which also helped. I think covering NXT maybe is the worst way to watch it because it's one of those shows where you're paying half attention and you're skipping through quite a lot. I still believe it should be an hour, but you know, when it's on main TV, that's not going to happen. Anyway, that brings me to the end of the review. I was able to talk about NXT because I blasted through Raw. Yeah, that happened with SmackDown. State of these shows, I might be quite short for this period until the new year. Quite often with SmackDown, I blast through it pretty quickly because I only got like maybe like two things I want to talk about, and then it's the like other notes. Raw's going to be the same. Like, I'm not going to want to talk about every segment, and they haven't got time to make every segment like really worth dedicating the time to. So compared to like the four segments I'd probably talk about before I got to the other notes, I'm now probably just going to be doing two again. So yeah. Anyway, that brings me to the end of the show. Bad Blood, absolutely fine. It's just very mediocre in the middle, but the main event and the opening match, absolutely incredible. The opening match in particular. The Rock obviously leaving them in a very, very positive way too. And then Monday Night Raw, it just kind of carried momentum, and the main event, very, very solid with Gunther vs. Sami Zayn. You can skip the rest of the show. Like, nothing of importance happens, but the main event is super enjoyable. We are in that period, though, where we're building to a Saudi Arabia show, and they've got a special championship that's online for the show. So there's a very strong chance we might just be in a bubble, and I feel like this SmackDown is going to be very telling. How much are storylines being built in this period? The little Saudi Arabia bubble, because we'd moved past that. But the bringing back of this championship thing, it's a bit more like, is this like a little bubble thing where my recommendation each week will be like, yeah, just take the month off. It's what I used to say when I was writing for Laws of Pain. I used to say in my writings, like, yeah, you're going to take the month off. Like, it's fine. Come back in a month. There's no point to watch these shows whilst in the Saudi Arabia bubble. Anyway, with that, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated. Never take it for granted. I don't need to know that down anymore. I just know it. I've said it enough. I'll be back this time next week to talk about 2 hour Monday Night Raw and 2 hour Friday Night SmackDown. And also do check out all the other shows here on Social Suspects Podcast Network. Buy our merch. Big massive thank you to Dickie as well. Listen to the show with Sam Brown if you want to learn more about Dickie and how he started up Chopped Teas and all of that stuff. He's done absolutely amazing work and so, so thankful for the man. Also, a big shout out to Jeremy and Josh out in Florida. They're in Tampa and getting through the hurricane. Absolutely. Apparently they're both fine, but you know, Florida not doing super well at the moment. So thoughts out to them at the moment. So with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.